May it please the Court.
Sure.
There are two primary issues presented in CenturyLink's appeal here. The first is whether CenturyLink's notice of appeal was timely filed. And as I believe the Court recognized in granting transfer, there's a split among the districts of the Court of Appeals on that question and what the timing is for the appeal. The second issue is whether the trial court erroneously denied CenturyLink's motion to compel arbitration on the merits. With respect to timeliness, in determining when to file a notice of appeal, CenturyLink relied upon the tried and true rule 30 plus 10 for judgments. When a trial court issues a judgment, enters it, then it is not final for 30 days under the rules, at which time it becomes final. And in the meantime, the trial court has the ability to vacate, modify, or change its order. And then once it becomes final per the rule, you have 10 days to file your notice of appeal.
Now, was there any case law out there at the time that you relied upon?
No, Your Honor, there was not. There was one case that was out of the Southern District, is the Hershey decision. That one did rule adversely to our position on this point.
And that was in existence when you made that decision?
It was, but it was in a weird status, and we didn't see it for this reason. When you look at the case notes following each of the rules that were relying on 74.01, 81.05, 81.04, the Hershey decision actually didn't show up in the table of decisions that we looked at, and so we just did not see it. Now, it does show up if you do a word search for those rules. We did that subsequently, and it does show up then. But it did not show up in the ordinary course as you would expect when doing a review of authority. But you are correct. It did exist, and we do not deny that.
And why isn't that the better law? Why isn't the more detailed statute as opposed to the general statute, why isn't that more applicable?
The Hershey case actually did not really do an analysis of all of the available statutes and rules, and it did not hold them all in conformity with each other. When reviewing a motion to compel arbitration, it is section 435.440 that provides that an order denying a motion to compel arbitration is appealable. Then it says in subsection 2 that such an appeal is to be taken in the manner and to the same extent as from oral judgments in civil action. So it is to be considered consistently with other orders that are taken upon appeal. Section 74.01A provides that an appealable order is defined as a judgment. So it is, again, treated as a judgment. That then takes us down the line of the other rules that I was referencing, where you have a rule 81.05A1, a judgment is final 30 days after its entry, and then 81.04, you have 10 days after it's final to submit your notice of appeal.
Counsel, why do we have 30-day period where before it's final in cases of final judgments?
I believe it's so the trial court can revisit its prior orders. It can be determined.
Because the trial court has control over its judgment for 30 days.
That is correct.
But when you issue an interlocutory order, that rationale doesn't apply, does it? Because the trial court has however long the trial takes. It could be a year. It could be whatever period of time. So normally you have 30 days and then 10 days to appeal because the trial court can modify, do anything it wants to the judgment in that 30-day period. But when you're dealing with an order during the course of the trial, the reason for that 30-day delay before a judgment is considered final for purposes of appeal doesn't really fit with, and if you look at the rules talking about it, it doesn't fit. There's no after-trial motions. There's nothing that goes on because you're in the midst of a long trial process. So is it logical to have a 30-day delay where a judge can actually set aside an order any time, and normally in the middle of a trial?
It's perfectly logical, Your Honor, and for this reason. One of the reasons why you have a trial judge retain jurisdiction over, or retain control over its judgment for that 30-day period is so that you have a well-considered, well-reasoned judgment that this court or the Court of Appeals can consider. So it gives it an opportunity to correct its mistakes. For that reason, because in your typical interlocutory case, interlocutory order, you have to wait until a final judgment resolving all of the issues in the case before you can take it up to this court or the Court of Appeals. In the situation where you have a denial of a motion to compel arbitration, there is a statutory right to take an early appeal on an interlocutory basis. And therefore, you have the same reason to have a trial court retain control over its judgment so that the trial court can correct any errors before going after
appeal. But actually, the other reason is you have motions for new trial, they extend it for 90 days. if there's a final judgment, you're looking over the entire case, whereas the interlocutory appeal, it's one decision that the court issued, and that's why we have applied these rules somewhat technically. For example, if you do an amended pleading and you fail to staple the doctor's expert witness affidavit, you lose your case. This court applied that strictly according to the rules, and similarly, we have the statute about the arbitration.
And we are asking you to apply the rules and the statute strictly here, according to their express terms, and not to import anything into them.
Let me ask you a question about that.
We have very few, the legislature has given very few rights of interlocutory appeal. They've carved this thing out specially so that if you think there was an erroneous decision, you've got to appeal in 10 days if you want appellate review. If you want to just keep trying to convince the trial court you're right, you've got all the way to the end to do that. I mean, you'd have all the time, you know, you wanted. But if you want to seek appellate review, you got to do it in 10 days. Why doesn't it make sense that they, if they're going to create a special interlocutory way for appeal, that they don't also intend for us to follow their special rule regarding time?
Well, in addition to what I said about the trial court resolving any issues or corrections with respect to its order before it goes to the Court of Appeals, the legislature here did the opposite. In the statute, 435.440.2, the legislature mandated that appeals from an order denying a motion to compel arbitration be treated like any other appealable order. So it didn't do a carve-out. That's unlike the granting of a motion for class certification, in which the rule governing that process sets forth a special process. And that one specifically says you have 10 days to initiate that process by submitting a petition with the Court of Appeals seeking permission to appeal and including various detailed items, as opposed to the ordinary process that the legislature mandated for appeals from this type of order. In addition, the rules of this court, 74.01A, specifically defines a judgment to include an order that is appealable. This is an order that is appealable. So there is no special process that was set forth for motions to compel arbitration other than granting an ordinary appeal, as with any other judgment, to the Court of Appeals on an interlocutory basis.
Counsel, Judge Fisher's question assumes something that I was going to ask about, which is this your, do you have an extra right of interlocutory appeal, or is that your only time and only right to appeal this issue of arbitrability? If you don't appeal within either 10 or 40 days, whatever we say the rule is, have you lost your chance to appeal, or can you raise that again at the end of the case?
I believe that's an open question that hasn't been resolved by this court, Your Honor. The wills and trust cases, the probate cases that the Court of Appeals and Mr. Sanford relies upon, imply that you would have both the right to seek an interlocutory appeal and the right to seek an appeal of the order denying a motion to compel arbitration at the conclusion of the case. But that is on a different footing as well, because that does provide for a 10-day immediate appeal instead of the ordinary appeal process that we
believe applies. It seems to me, if this is your only chance, that would be stronger argument for your 30 days to consider and then 10 days. But if you have a chance at the end also, then it makes no sense to have this 30-day period in the middle when you get the whole trial, too.
Well, I think you're right, Your Honor, that if we have two chances, if we only have one chance, it's a much stronger argument for why you would have 30 days plus 10. I'm just simply saying that it is an open question. It has not been resolved. And I think that, you know, if we go back down and we lose the case below, I'm going to be seeking to have that question resolved at some point. So I'm not willing to concede it one way or the other.
Right.
But it could be totally rational if the legislature would say, we're giving you a 10-day time to appeal so we can move this case along and come to a final if you don't win, as opposed to going through a full appeal process with 30 days, and they might have wanted the case to move forward.
I agree that it would have been a rational thing for them to do if they had done so, but they did the opposite. What they did is they said that appeals of this type of order shall be handled as any other judgment from a civil case. And then the rules of this court defined an appealable order, which this is, as a judgment. And then from that, the timing flows in the ordinary course of the 30 plus 10 timeline. And so there is no special process that they created. Could they have done so?
And would it be rational? Yes. What if the order went the other way? The other side had no right to appeal, correct? They had no right to interlocutory appeal.
That is correct.
So how can you say this is not special for this particular situation?
I think this.
I mean, it's one of the few rights of interlocutory I've noticed where only one side gets it, but the other side doesn't.
I have to agree, Your Honor. I think it is unusual, and it's because of the Federal Arbitration Act, which has also been adopted by the Uniform Arbitration Act in Missouri, and the legislative intent to give special rights in the event of a motion when a motion to compel arbitration has been denied. There is a long body of authority, Supreme Court authority and otherwise, also from this court, evidencing a favor for arbitration. There is a public policy, just as there is in favor of settlement, there is a public policy favoring arbitration. One of the recognitions of that public policy is the right of interlocutory appeal in the event that a motion to compel arbitration is denied.
But as my former colleague Dean Wolf said when he was on the court, there is life after Concepcion, and there was the Brewer case, and there is the Arbitration Act that says it is subject to certain elements of the state law. And so in this case, the state passed this law allowing this interlocutory appeal with no rights to your opponent. And that was what I'm just saying. There are exceptions to the Concepcion case.
And I would agree with you, Your Honor. I see my time is about up. I would say we do not meet any of the exceptions here, that this is a valid binding arbitration agreement and should be allowed to be reviewed on its merits. Thank you.
Thank you.
Naturally, I think that the Western District got this completely right. But it's as the court asked the question, not only was the Hershaway case on the books, but also a case called McLean, which actually had involved an entity I was involved with earlier, but I wasn't involved at the time that decision was made. But the McLean case was on the books to the same effect. So both the Western District and the Southern District agreed at the time, and there was no contrary authority in the Eastern District.
Both of them held 10 days.
Yes, they held that the that 535.44 established a different right to appeal, which in fact was immediately effective and not subject to the judgment requirements that Rule 74.04 required. The issue in McLean was essentially that you had to have a judgment in order to appeal. They said no, 440 was different. You can appeal it immediately without it being a judgment. They didn't address the timing issue in McLean, but they did hold the fundamental issue that 435.440 is a special statute which will be controlling over the general statute, even if, in fact, 74.04 would indicate that you had to have a judgment in order to appeal.
Opposing counsel says that our rule says any appealable order is a judgment, and therefore all the rules regarding judgments apply, which is different than what you said McLean says. But what about that? If you follow out rule to rule, it seems to
74.01 does say that, in fact, a judgment, as used in these rules, includes a decree and any order from which an appeal lies. But it goes on to say that in order for something to be a judgment, it must be called a judgment or a decree. So the statute, the rule was established before the legislature passed 435.440, which gave a right to appeal an order different than a judgment. And therefore, you have to presume that the specific statute was intended to do what it says. Otherwise, Rule 74.04 strips away the right given by the legislature, which, you know, Section 5.5 of the Constitution says it cannot do. So in order to harmonize the two, you have to presume that the rule adopted by the Western District, that is the specific rule, in fact applies, and an order is immediately appealable.
That would make sense in the McLean case, where the tug of war was between whether it had to be denominated an order or a judgment. But here, there is no tug of war, because the specific statute says we're going to use the general appeal scheme, and the general appeal scheme is 30 plus 10.
Well, no, it only as to judgments. Only as to things denominated as judgments.
No, it doesn't not say as to denominated order. As judgment. It says judgment, and judgment is defined as including an order from which appeal lies.
It says specifically, 85.01 says a judgment becomes final after 30 days. It does not say an order becomes final after 30 days. And this has not been denominated a judgment. It would have to be denominated a judgment by someone, and it could be, as was pointed out at the end of the case, when a judgment is rendered, and then the 40 plus 10 would apply. But it's an order currently. It is not denominated a judgment. Under 74.01, in order to be a judgment which is appealable, it has to be denominated as such. So an order denominated as a judgment is subject to the 40 plus 10. But this one has not been denominated a judgment. It is only an order which you can only take an appeal under 435.440, specifically giving you that right to do it. That's how to harmonize those two ideas. So, yes, it's possible. This could be a 40 plus 10 time period if someone had denominated a judgment. And, in fact, they asked the court to denominate it a judgment, and she did not.
So it would all depend on what the trial court called it.
That's right. And the legislature took it out of the trial court's hands in terms of appealing an order denying an arbitration specifically for this reason, so that a judge could not determine whether or not this particular order could be appealed immediately. But if you do that, you have to follow the rules, and because it's effective immediately upon entry, you got to appeal within 10 days.
So what if at the end of the case they raise this issue on appeal? What if we agree with you that they've waived this right for immediate interlocutory appeal? Have they waived any right to appeal, or do they get to raise it at the end of the case?
I think they get to raise it on appeal at the end of the case if it's denominated as a judgment, 40 plus 10. I think that it's still an active issue. This was a special right given immediately to get a decision on that issue for a specific reason if they had chose to follow the procedure
outlined. Well, at the end of a case, you get to appeal everything, whatever it's denominated, any orders on discovery or,
right,
or so forth at the end of the case. So.
That's right. You do.
Let me ask you, in this case, a dismissal of appeal, which is what you're asking for, has the legal equivalent of they didn't appeal.
That's right.
So they could hear it at the end like you suggest.
That's right.
So I'm going to ask you not about this case then. Let's assume they timely appealed it and won or lost. Would that issue then not be subject to later appeal? Because it would be a final resolution.
Yeah, I think that,
in other words, the defendant somewhat gets to pick, is what I'm saying.
That's right. If you had decided, I think they would be collaterally stopped unless there was some
law of the case. Law of the case.
Yeah, it would be the law of the case. That's right. It would be the law of the case in this instance that had been previously decided and would not be, unless there was some change or some new ruling, I would think. So they have the option that when they want it decided, but they have to follow the timing rules to get it decided early. They didn't do that here, and therefore we suggest that it not be decided at this instance. It certainly will probably come to you at some point in time. You'll have the right to see what kind of an issue this is, as tempted as I am to talk about it. Because it is an extreme issue. It's the equivalent of if someone under the old technology had sent you an envelope and you opened it, and under the flap of the envelope it says, now you have agreed to everything inside the envelope, without reading it. That's the net equivalent of what they're suggesting. The arbitration agreement, how it was accepted by my client.
Don't worry, we have those kind of arbitration agreements come to us all the time.
I would suspect that you do, and more so probably as Senator Elizabeth Warren has said, most Americans believe that the system is rigged, and they're right. Unfortunately, more and more of those come in the mail all the time. But in this case, we have a very strong issue that the trial court has denied in terms of whether or not there was acceptance of this agreement, whether or not, in fact, there was any arbitration agreement that applied. I mean, there's all kinds of issues that are really not properly before you regarding the very agreement they point to says it doesn't relate to telephone services. And so those issues can be more appropriately fleshed out in the court below where you've got a more adequate record to look at this issue at an appropriate time. But as of now, they have missed their deadline, and therefore there is nothing that the court need decide at this point in time.
The legislature basically gave the defendant two bites of the apple.
That's right. They gave them an early bite at the apple if they wanted to take it, and they didn't take it in this case. And therefore, they still have all the rights preserved under Rule 74 that they had before this rule was enacted.
And when we decided to take judgments, I think it was the Yates case, we wanted to give a bright line to what judgments were as far as orders, so people know when they can appeal and not appeal. It was not an ill-considered idea to make sure everyone knew what a judgment was so they knew when to appeal.
No, it really would upset the whole scheme of finality and certainty in this process if we interjected this idea that anything that is appealable is a judgment. When the legislature has intervened and said that certain orders can be appealed that wouldn't have been appealed previously, I mean, it's the equivalent of saying that, you know, since a rose is a flower, all flowers must be roses. Those two things do not need to follow, and it does not need to follow that simply because it's appealable it becomes a judgment, or it upsets the entire scheme, which says in Rule 74, to be a judgment, you must call it a judgment. Or a decree.
So let's say they go back and they ask to have it denominated a judgment, and the judge denies that.
That's right. Then, if she denies it,
for and when?
That already occurred, you said.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, they did ask her to do that, and she didn't do it.
They do it within the 10-day. They do it though, and then they do that, and then they ask to have it denominated a judgment, and the judge says, "No, I want to proceed with this trial. I don't want to give you 40 days.
Correct.
I want to move."
Right, and that's her prerogative. That's her prerogative. Unless she thinks that something is a judgment in her mind, that is to say that she's made the last decision she wants to make about this issue, she has that prerogative. That's within her discretion. I mean, the whole reason why she has the right to determine what is a judgment and what isn't is, you know, she may want additional evidence. She may want to see how this thing develops. That's why she controls the case until 30 days after judgment's rendered, so that even after the point in time that she says it's a judgment, she's got a chance to modify it. But until that point in time, you have provided with all your authority and the rules that she controls what comes to you as being a final ruling of hers.
How has she complied with the statement in 74.01A? Judgment as used in these rules includes a decree and any order from which an appeal lies. Isn't that an express statement that this is a judgment? And didn't violate the rule by not designating
it as a judgment? No, because that would allow you to ask her to designate anything that is potentially appealable by another statute as a final judgment of hers. It's not a final judgment of hers, and therefore she has a right to designate it as such if she is done with it. She apparently felt like she wasn't done with it, but the legislature gave them a different right, which did not rely upon her discretion, to appeal, and they chose not to take it within the time limits that were provided. That's how I rationalized the entire scheme.
If she had if she had denied the motion to compel arbitration in a judgment,
yes,
you're saying that would have been 30 plus 10.
That's right.
If she denies it in an order, it's only 10.
That's your right
position.
Because it's final at that point in time.
So
it's final for the
purpose. A judgment indicates I'm still thinking about it, but an order indicates I'm finished thinking about it.
No. In regard to an order, the legislature has said, regardless of what she's thinking about, you have a right to appeal it within 10 days because the order is effective when entered. Therefore, the legislature has given the litigant the right, irrespective of what the judge wants to do in regard to an appeal under 435.440. But it didn't change 74.01, which is the general rule about when appeals can be taken, and those can only be taken from judgments denominated as such. So it's a different right given to and directed towards different parties to the litigation.
Not every order is in judgment, correct?
That's right.
But
and not every order can
every
be appealed.
Judgment and order.
And not every order can be appealed either.
No, but is every judgment an order? Is it a subset of the universe of orders?
In the broadest general sense, yes. But just as one of my professors told me, be careful at the level of generalization your opponent is arguing it. It's not an order that can be appealed unless it's denominated as a judgment under Rule 74.
And unless it covers all the issues.
Unless it covers all the issues.
If it doesn't cover all the issues, we've seen a number of summary judgments where it's one part and it's not the other parts, and they say you got to do all the issues.
That's right. So I think that the scheme is rational, it makes sense, needs to be adhered to, or it upsets the entire apple cart, and you'll never know when you have a judgment and when you don't. The rule is pretty specific to give people finality and certainty in regard to when something really is a judgment that needs to be appealed from or lose your right totally. This is a special right which gives you additional rights to appeal quickly. And you have to take those within the time limits that have been given. Just as Judge Teitelman said, sometimes the application of these things are harsh, but you have indicated in certain circumstances that your hands are tied because the legislature has so decreed. Well, this is one of those instances, and it needs to be followed as the legislature, in their wisdom, has concocted the scheme, as long as it doesn't violate some constitutional right, of which you, of course, are the final arbiters. But here, it's simply a delay in the timing of the decision-making process, and therefore no constitutional right can be at issue in regard to your decision here. So I would suggest that the Western District's decision, as well as the Southern District's, be followed in this instance.
There can be a distinction between orders that by statute allow or can be appealed when they are interlocutory orders and an order that is a final disposition of a case. Like in a post-conviction remedy, the statutes provide for an order to be entered that is a final disposition. So is it appropriate that the order referred to in 7401 cover both interlocutory orders and orders that are final decisions of the whole case, or should that be a distinction we make in interpreting 7401?
I think 7401, in terms of read together, in terms of its two parts, which includes both the statement judgments as used in this rule, includes a decree and any order from which an appeal lies, needs to be read with the requirement that a judgment is rendered when entered. A judgment is entered when a writing signed by the judge, when it's signed by the judge and denominated judgment or decree is filed, must be read together to be the final type of order that you're referring to, Judge Breckenridge. And not simply any order that you can take an appeal from. Otherwise, there's no rationality to the requirement to call it a judgment or a decree under Rule 74.
Thank you.
Counsel, I was looking at our post-conviction rules, too, and 2915 appeal says, an order sustaining or overruling a motion filed under the provisions of this rule 2915 shall be deemed a final judgment for purposes of appeal by the movement or the state. If we had intended rule 7404 to to mean you could automatically appeal it, wouldn't we have said it's deemed a final judgment? You're saying that she called it an order, but we should deem it a final judgment that can be appealed. But we know how to say that specifically when we wanted to. We did that 2915 and 24035.
Well, I think what you have here, Your Honor, is the interplay between the legislature and the court rules. And the way we've interpreted them is completely consistent with each other. The legislature has declared that an order denying a motion to compel arbitration is appealable.
Absolutely.
On an interlocutory basis, consistent with both state law and federal law.
But you're asking us to treat it like a final judgment for purposes of the 30 days and so forth. But we know how to say when something's a final judgment, we want it treated that way. We spelled it out in these post-conviction rules.
I would say that you spelled it out quite clearly there, but it's also spelled out quite clearly in 74.101A, in which it says that a judgment, as used in these rules, there's no limitation, includes a decree or any order from which an appeal lies. And the legislature has declared that an order of the type we have at issue here is an order from which an appeal lies. And then Mr. McLean's argument relies entirely on a 10-day rule that appears nowhere in any rule, nowhere in any statute, with the exception of 81.04. But 81.04 relates directly back to 81.05 and the rule of finality, which says that it is not final for 30 days after entry.
But as Judge Russell said so eloquently, that the specialized law or rule predominates over the general, and as Judge Russell started this colloquy off, why shouldn't we apply the special statute versus the more general one?
Because the special statute, the statute authorizing an appeal on an interlocutory basis, specifically says you treat it along with the general. And there is no general statute out there that imposes a 10-day limitation. There's nothing in the statute, there is nothing in the rules. The only one that does is 81.04, and that links back to the finality rule of 81.05. And it's really important here because the trial judge did violate the rules. She should have denominated something a judgment instead of just an order. What she did instead was she issued a ruling on their summary judgment that denied our motion to compel arbitration, and then 4 days later, she issued another docket entry saying that it was still under advisement. So that's why the finality was important here. What do we do?
Why is it final if she said that? She never denominated a judgment, and she said it's still under advisement, so why do you have a final appealable order?
We have
just only under the statute, but not under our rules. You wouldn't otherwise.
Well, I think under the statute, we have an appealable order because federal law provides for us to have an appealable order. 30 days had passed from the order denying our motion to compel arbitration. It became final under this court's rules, and therefore we had to appeal within 10 days. If we did not have that right, then the trial judge was in violation of federal and state law. By denying our right under 9 U.S.C. 16 and its state analog to bring an interlocutory appeal of an order denying motion to compel arbitration. And so that's why our construction, which is consistent with the policy, consistent with federal and state policy, consistent with the rules, consistent with the statutes, that's why it makes sense. And to imagine a 10-day limitation that doesn't exist in the statute or the rules into the scheme is erroneous. Thank you.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.